If you're wondering why Sweden and Finland broke with neutrality and joined NATO, well, just look at the map. Long before 2022 and Vladimir Putin's play for Ukraine's capital, Stockholm was already boosting its military, reintroducing a base on the strategic island of Gotland in 2018. Across the Baltic Sea, there you see it, the Russian exclave of Kaliningrad. France 24 went to Gotland. That exclusive report in a moment will ask, well, just how crowded it's gotten in the Baltic Sea, whether joining NATO will deter Russia from trying its luck beyond Ukraine or stoke a perilous showdown. Today in the France 24 debate, we're looking at Sweden's Baltic Sea strategy. Joining us from Berlin, William Alberg, Director of Strategy, Technology and Arms Control at the International Institute for Strategic Studies. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Francois.
Also in our company from Stockholm in Sweden, we're with Gunilla Herolf, Senior Associate Research Fellow at the Swedish Institute of International Affairs. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
And France 24's Clovis Casali is with us as well. Your reactions, by the way, on the hashtag F24Debate. No sooner had Sweden broken with two centuries of neutrality that Clovis was on a plane.
Absolutely. We went to Gotland Island with Julien Sauvager. Why? Because it's a strategic location in the Baltic Sea. And we wanted to understand what is Sweden's position now with what's going on in Ukraine. Well, you're going to see all of that in our report right away.
It's a Swedish island nestled in the heart of the Baltic Sea. Only 300 kilometers off the coast of the Russian enclave of Kaliningrad. Gotland has always been a strategic location, and during the Cold War, thousands of troops were stationed here. When the Soviet Union collapsed, Stockholm demilitarized the island. But after Vladimir Putin decided to attack Ukraine, Sweden joined NATO. It re-established a Gotland regiment in 2018 and reintroduced military service. Conscripts are now back on the island.
In the beginning, it's pretty unusual. Feels a bit weird. Learn to handle weapons, to take care of my stuff, and most of all, drive a tank. That's what I'm the best at.
The 20-year-old trains on a Leopard 2, a modern battle tank worth 5 million euros, and similar to those sent by Sweden to help Ukraine. He admits they talk about the Russian threat at times.
It happens, yeah. But if you think about all the bad stuff, you can't live a normal life.
Yeah, it makes a pill.
200 conscripts, men and women, will be based in Gotland next year. One major challenge is accommodation. So the army is building infrastructures that we're forbidden to film. The commander of the regiment says the island is crucial to the defense of Sweden, and some are watching.
Whoever possesses the island from a military perspective can then affect the air movement and the movement on the Baltic Sea as well. So we have different intelligence showing, of course, that it's vital for Russia, being also a Baltic Sea region nation, to keep control of what the Swedes, we are doing on the island, and now within a NATO context as well.
What kind of intelligence?
I can't go into that, but we have a pretty good picture of what they're looking at.
New conscripts have just arrived on the island. They're spending their first night in the forest. Tuva and Rockström are ready.
This afternoon we're gonna learn how to build the tent.
And build it up and then take it down. Build it up, take it down. Build
to
up, take
be it down. Fast.
When you're ready, stand in line. Go behind that and in a group.
Many come from Stockholm, like Tom. They'll be based in Gotland for the next 15 months.
It's a big change, but it feels good. First of all, it's a fun thing to do, and then it's also feels like something you need to do in this day when the world is changing so rapidly.
I think I'm gonna remember this until I die. I'm not used to having this constant stress, you know, not so much sleep. You wake up at like 5, you learn so much new, and we have different kinds of tests, for example, to shoot, you know, shot with the gun. So I always want to defend Sweden, it's my home country. But it's also because I wanna develop as a person, be a better person. And
okay, so now you're going to come with me and we'll go to the next location.
The conscripts will help reinforce army ranks if a war breaks out. Tuva and the others weren't yet born when the Gotland peace movement gained traction in the 1980s. These veteran activists have invited the island's young guard to talk about Sweden joining NATO.
We thought when the wall came down, when the Soviet Union collapsed, and when they dismantled nuclear weapons, we thought we had made it, but it wasn't the case.
There's my name everywhere, here.
Kirsten Blomberg has brought old press cuttings on her movement.
In India and Bangladesh, is it Rajiv Gandhi?
She reluctantly says her views have slightly changed.
So I must say, I'm not 100% pacifist. It was not before for me, but now it is a difficult question for me because of Ukraine and because of all my friends there. And I know how they struggle. I work with the refugees here, doing different activities with the children and so.
They are all concerned by the issue of nuclear weapons.
We shouldn't have to choose between NATO or Russia. Like, there is a big in-between as well. Since I'm a dad, and I don't want my kids to become NATO soldiers. And also, of course, I don't want to become a neighbor with American nuclear arms, which I think we have a risk of happening right now.
A point of view once widely shared in the country. 10 years ago, most Swedes were against joining NATO. It's now the opposite, with over 60% of the people in favor, according to polls. By invading Ukraine, Vladimir Putin has driven Sweden into the arms of NATO.
Clovis Casali, the young conscripts that you were with, they seem to really have a grasp on what this means, the break officially with 2 centuries of neutrality.
And I have to say, the most astonishing thing is seeing that 20-year-old drive a Leopard 2 tank. And yes, indeed, when we spoke to these young conscripts, they seemed very willing to be doing what they're doing. Imagine, that's 15 months far from your home, on an island, training, getting up very early, harsh conditions. But they do feel that there's a need to defend their country if a war breaks out. And also maybe learn new skills. They see that as part of life. And it was for a long time in the country, in Sweden, military conscription. It was ended. It was brought back in following the war on Ukraine. And it was all down to Vladimir Putin, really.
Gunilla Herolf, the peace movement that we saw there, they have dwindled in size over the years. There was the remilitarization of Gotland that happens in 2018. At the time, you could say Germany was still much more in denial over what was going on in Crimea, in the Donbass. Why were the Swedes more proactive than the Germans?
I think the reason is that if you look at Swedish history, we have been at war with Russia many times. And it has been also during the times when we have not been at war, like these 200 years, the relations have never been really good between Sweden and Russia. For example, during the Cold War, we had several incidents. For example, when the Russians got the Swedish diplomat Raoul Wallenberg, who was helping Jews in Budapest, and took him to Russia, and where he was killed. The way Russia behaved against our good neighbor Finland during the Second World War was another thing that we saw. So there has, for many years, been a real hesitance and suspicions against Russia.
And Gunilla, what is your reaction when you see those images of the soldiers on maneuvers on Gotland Island?
Yeah, it's normal for me. I'm a Swede. It's not strange because Swedes have been wanting to defend themselves and have been doing it very much during the Cold War. It was only from 1992 that we had an exception. Sweden had one of the best air forces in Europe. And the reason, for example, the reason is that since we were non-aligned, we don't say neutral, we say non-aligned, we had no security from others. We knew that if there was a war, we might have to fend for ourselves, help ourselves as best we could. And therefore, there was a lot of activities in Sweden in order to make this possible. So therefore, the period from 1990 was the exception, not what we see now.
William Abercway, your remit is non-proliferation. Your thoughts when you heard that veteran peace activist in the report?
Well, I understand Sweden has sort of a myth about itself, and I think Gunilla was referring to that just a moment ago. Even during the Cold War, Sweden had a clandestine nuclear weapons program. It's recently been declassified, and you can find a lot of material about it. But Sweden has this idea that it was going it alone for a long time, even though it had secret talks with the United States on its defense, in order also to get rid of its nuclear weapons. It had a massive defense industry. It was one of the leading defense industries in the world, a huge army, and an ability to defend itself. So I think this myth of exceptionalism that somehow Sweden has always been neutral. No, it's not aligned, but you know, clandestinely, I think, at least in spirit, it was aligned very much with the West. And now this is sort of reverting to that norm and joining the NATO alliance, because with Finland in the alliance, they can now turn the Baltic, Nordic, and High North region into a much more secure place.
I was going to say, does it mean it's game over that actually the Baltic Sea is now officially NATO's turf, or could it be volatile?
Well, you have to understand that the Russians have actually moved a huge number of high readiness forces and amphibious forces into the Kaliningrad-St. Petersburg region after the end of the Cold War. So actually you had the 76th Airborne Division based in Pskov. You had four or five very, very large amphibious landing ships based in the region, all because NATO and NATO did not have the forces necessary to defend the Baltics. With Sweden and Finland outside the alliance, it was much more difficult. So actually, you can see right now, Russia has moved a lot of those amphibious forces into the Black Sea. It's moved a lot of its high readiness forces towards Ukraine. So actually, I think the Nordic-Baltic region will become much more secure. Russia wants to attack where we're weak, not where we're strong. And now this turns the Baltic-Nordic region into a unified military command, into a bastion. There's no longer the advantage for Russia to have disruptive capabilities or high readiness forces waiting for what? NATO would defeat it now if it tried to attack the Baltics.
Clovis Casady, when you're standing on Gotland, which is larger, you can see it on this map, than Luxembourg is, do you get a sense of just how strategic it is?
Absolutely, in the heart of the Baltic Sea. And also, coming back to the point raised before, we went to Finland for France 24 to do a series of reports, and you really see in Finland, at that border fence. They've built a border fence at the border with Russia. Well, you see that fears you might pick up on in Sweden, well, are there also in Finland. And when we spoke to Colonel Rasmussen that you saw in the report, the commander of the Gotland Regiment, I said, what is this going to change in terms of relations with your neighbours? And he replied, Sweden has always had very close ties with our Finnish brothers, as he said. And that's only going to be reinforced in the NATO context, not just with Finland, but also with Norway, with Iceland. And it's a real key thing to stress, the fact that now NATO has that alliance of states, even though there are always kind of relations between NATO and Sweden, notably in the past, but now it's really on paper. And when I asked Colonel Rasmussen about what it's actually changing, well, he said, you know what? This is just a transition, and the transition started a long time ago because there were military exercises, joint exercises between NATO nations, NATO troops, and our troops, and there will be more, notably in June on the island of Gotland, naval exercises with some land components.
So is this the language of deterrence, Gunilla Herolf? Or is it, as many viewers fear, mission creep and an escalation? Have we slept, walked into World War III?
No, it's very much a language of deterrence. And Sweden knows exactly what they want to do. They want to defend their country together with NATO. It's no mission creep here. I also want to say that Mr. Ahlberg was absolutely right in pointing out the fact that Sweden was very much a Western country already during the Cold War. The secret cooperation with the UK, with the United States, with several other countries. These were things that people in general didn't know about, but which Sweden did as a kind of realpolitik in order to keep safe. And that has been the case all the time. The Swedish policy during the times of non-alignment has always been predominantly how to keep out of wars.
Well, let's take a listen to what's been going on this Thursday. Poland's new prime minister welcoming his Ukrainian counterpart to Warsaw. The pair trying to iron out differences over cheap food imports from Ukraine. They still don't see eye to eye, but certainly on the same page when it comes to Moscow, particularly in the week where Poland accused a Russian air missile of briefly violating its airspace. And for his part, Vladimir Putin warning NATO over its supply of F-16s to Ukraine. This while touring a military base and training center in Torzhok, that's northwest of Moscow.
Конечно.
Of course, if they use from air bases of third countries, they will become a legitimate target for us, wherever they are. F-16s are capable of carrying nuclear weapons. We will also need to take that into account while organizing our combat operations.
William Albuquerque, do you dismiss that as just rhetoric, or do you take that threat seriously that Russia, if F-16s are used from bases outside of Ukraine, that they will become legitimate targets for Russia?
I think Putin's serious, and I think he's actually correct. If F-16s take off from Poland in order to strike inside Russian territory or Russian-held Ukrainian territory, that would involve Poland in the war. But if the F-16s are based in Ukraine, then we're okay. And this has been Putin's long-term interest, to keep direct conflict between NATO and Russia out of the equation here, because ultimately Russia wants to crush Ukraine. And if the West gets directly involved in combat, then that would be a huge escalation. So Russia has been sending deterrent signals to try to keep the U.S. and NATO from direct involvement. So I think this is very consistent with previous threats, to try to limit the conflict so that it's Russia versus Ukraine, to try to see if he can inhibit Western support for Ukraine. It hasn't worked, and I think President Macron has been very important in playing that role of showing Russia that NATO and France and the U.S. will continue to support Ukraine as much as possible without getting directly involved in combat operations.
So Gunilla Herolf, listening to William there, can we officially say that the Cold War is back, this language of deterrence? It sure sounds like the Cold War.
Absolutely. I think it's very much the Cold War is back. But it's also, what I would like to add, another red line that the Russians are saying, if you do that, then you will have advanced to a stage where we will do terrible things to you. And they did that with a number of weapons, and it didn't work out. So I'm not so sure it is a sign of anything more than deep worry from Putin's side that the F-16 will make a real difference.
When it comes to reading the Kremlin, reading Moscow, reading what Vladimir Putin wants, You talked earlier about Sweden has a long history of going to war with Russia. That's in the past. Would you say that the young people that we saw in that report, they have a keener sense of what Russia is all about than we do sitting here in Paris?
I think so, absolutely. If you live in Finland or Sweden, you know very well the history with Russia. But not only the history, you know what Russia stands for now. We've been subjected to a lot of harassment from Russia. I remember in 2013 when Russia sent several bomber planes towards Sweden and they turned away just outside the territorial border. But it was a very clear signal that Sweden was seen as an enemy country for Russia and many other things. In spite of Sweden having done nothing in order to annoy Russia, they wanted to show us that we were a small country. And this is important because something that influenced Sweden very much was the letter that we all know from December 2021. And this was when Russia told the world how to behave. And when it came to Finland and Sweden, it was very clear that it told us that we were small countries, we were not important, whereas the big countries should divide the world and the small countries were in their interest area. And Sweden and Finland were in the Russian interest area. That had a huge effect on the Swedish population.
William Abiquiu, is Vladimir Putin interested in regaining the territories of the Soviet Union, or do his designs go further?
He has said publicly that he thinks the collapse of the Soviet Union was one of the worst disasters to befall the world. I think if the West did not show that they were willing to defend themselves, I think he would have been happy to try to take back the Baltics. I think the fact that Finland and Sweden have joined NATO has demonstrated to him that he will not be able to do that. But I still think he has designs not only on Ukraine, but on Belarus. The placement by Putin of nuclear weapons in Belarus is a huge change. And I think part of the longer term absorption of Belarus back into a Russian empire. He also made noises a couple years ago about taking the north of Kazakhstan. He's talked about putting troops in Azerbaijan. He wanted to get the band back together, but I really think the world has shown him through Ukraine standing up, but also through the choices that countries like Sweden have made, that that's just not going to happen.
So, Clovis Casari, tell us about those peace activists that we see in the report. Some of them are not old at all. They're young.
There's a bit of all generations, really, and you have clearly the old guard that was there were activists in the 80s, in the 70s, sometimes disillusioned by the current situation. They thought history was over. They thought that the war was over, that Russia would become a liberal state, that it was no longer a threat. Clearly disappointed there. And then you've got the young generation who we saw in the report, who still believes that being neutral, non-aligned, neutral at least, I mean, at least not taking sides, clearly, as it is the case now. Well, that would be the best solution to maybe act as peace mediators or stay out of the conflict. And I wanted to say something about the mood of people in Sweden, because in the media, it's often been overstated the fears in Sweden. I don't think we can say that people in Sweden are scared. They're more wary. They're more careful. And it goes back to their history. One of our colleagues, Sarah, who's Swedish, was telling us just before we went on to the set that people in her country knew where the safety rooms, where the shelters were. That's unthinkable here in France. I never grew up thinking
nuclear fallout shelters.
Yes. If a bomb lands on Paris, where shall I go and hide? Or in London, where shall I go and hide? That's the case in Sweden. And when we were talking to people in Stockholm, they were telling us that some homeowners also provided them with toilet paper, food, water tanks to be placed in these safety rooms in the buildings, even though those safety rooms over the years have more or less become places for bicycles and so on. And one final word, for a long time, when you built homes in Sweden, you had to have a safety room there. And that changed 30 or 40 years ago. Let's see if in the future now, future promoters or builders do actually put safety rooms in those buildings.
Gunilla Herolf, is that overkill?
No, I think it's normal because this is what the situation was when I grew up. We went to special courses. Women learned how to help the wounded. Men went to refresher courses in the military. That was seen as a normal thing to do. And we also knew always where our shelters were. It was not the case that we were scared. It was that just normal preparedness as we saw it.
All right, normal preparedness, that's the final word for now. Gunilla Herolf, I want to thank you so much for joining us from Stockholm. I want to thank William Albuquerque from Berlin. Clovis Casady, your report will be online shortly. We can see it there. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.
Thank you very much.